Hello there. So this is the talk on the future of life insurance stress testing. My name is Ian Bull-Craig. I'm a director at EY. It's my pleasure to welcome three members of my EY team here to present to you on stress testing. Stress testing has been recognized as an area for development since the ICAAP was first introduced about 3 years ago. Recently, focus has turned away from sort of single scenarios onto a lot more multi-year and multi-state calculations. This presentation will consider how stress testing capabilities are expected to develop in the future to meet key stakeholder expectations. So just to introduce my three colleagues from EY here. Beside me here is Thuy Trung. Thuy's a senior manager with over 12 years of experience in the financial services industry and has worked with many companies in Australia, the UK and Europe on stress testing and wider capital modelling. Next to Thuy is Elizabeth Baker. Elizabeth's a director with over 25 years' experience in the financial service industry in Australia, Europe and Asia. She has extensive operational experience in a broad range of financial services areas, including actuarial, capital management, financial controlling, management reporting, corporate finance, asset liability management, risk. More? Is that it? Yeah? Okay. It's a long list. And last of all is Mira Sardana. Mira is a manager with over 5 years' experience in the financial services industry. She's been involved in developing and reviewing stress testing approaches and models for a number of Australian life insurers. In addition, Mira has focused on wider capital and risk management projects, including providing an assessment of the ICAAP for various insurers. So please join me in welcoming Thuy to the stage here.
Thanks, Ian, and welcome everyone to our session this afternoon. The world we live in is an increasingly uncertain place, with risks and events previously beyond the realms of imagination seemingly becoming more common. For instance, how easy is it now for someone to steal your confidential business information and leak it to the world's media? Government agencies, companies and the community are being targeted in new ways, with cyber attacks and acts of violence becoming almost everyday occurrences. The ease of air travel has made holidays and conducting business much easier, but it has also meant the very quick spread of diseases. And how do you model the future of the euro currency when Eurozone membership is so uncertain, and yet the world is getting more uncertain still? So in this uncertain world, how do we manage our businesses to prepare ourselves for uncertainty? One tool we can use is stress testing to understand the impacts of certain scenarios unfolding on our business. In today's session, we will discuss stress testing narratives. By stress testing narratives, we mean the end-to-end process of performing a stress test, not just the two or three line description of the scenario that you may find at the beginning of a stress testing report. We'll start off first by looking at the current state of the industry in stress testing. We will then outline one possible approach to developing a stress testing narrative and demonstrate via a fictitious example of how this approach could be applied. We will then end with a discussion on some of the key challenges that companies face. So before I start my presentation, can you please show me by raising your hand if you have been involved in stress testing exercises for your clients or for your companies? Okay, great. So stress testing is not a new concept and is not exclusive to financial services. For instance, it is used widely in medical science, in the car industry, airline industry, and also the energy industry. It is a key regulatory tool used by APRA, especially in times of financial crisis. In 2008, we saw APRA require its banks, life and general insurers to perform ad hoc stress testing, and APRA addressed weaknesses in results with individual firms at the time. APRA, as you can see from the chart, APRA has increased its focus on stress testing in recent years and has increased its investment of resources in this area since 2012. We believe this may be driven in part by some of the activities from overseas insurers, overseas regulators. As an example, the European regulator EIOPA and the UK regulator the PRA both conduct regular industry-wide stress testing for the firms that they regulate. So just going through the chart on the screen, 2009 saw the first set of bank stress testing since the implementation of Basel II. This stress test involved 20 banks, and the scenario was a three-year decline in global economic conditions, and none of the banks failed. There were follow-up tests in 2011 and also 2014, with the 2014 scenario including a domestic housing crisis. 2015 saw the first life insurance industry stress testing since the implementation of LAGIC, as referenced in this morning's plenary session. This test involved a selection of life insurers and reinsurers, and APRA set out its expectations of stress testing following the exercise to the remainder of the life insurance industry in writing. And this year, we will see the focus shift to general insurers, with the selection being required to participate later this year in APRA stress testing. So what are some of the lessons from overseas insurers that we might be able to apply locally? In 2015, EY performed a survey of European and US global insurers. We've provided some of the results on the screen. It is quite detailed, so don't try to look into the detail, and today we'll just touch on some of the key messages. European CROs see stress testing as a very valuable risk management tool, but they recognise they need to do more and that their local regulators expect more from them. One area in particular is on relevance. European CROs note that the true value of stress testing only comes about when the results are relevant to the business. And this means capturing all the relevant risks across the business. And we will touch on this point later in this session. In terms of techniques and developing a stress testing narrative, most European insurers use a collaborative approach involving stakeholders across the business, with some companies also involving the full C-suite. Moving over to the US, increased regulatory pressure has meant that CROs are investing more time and resources into capital modelling and their stress testing capability. So we've discussed briefly the recent history in Australia of stress testing and what some of the overseas insurers have done. So where do we think the Australian industry and others are now in terms of stress testing capability? If you talk to different people, you'll get wildly different views. And the view we have presented here today is our personal view based on our experience and discussions we've had recently with people across the industry, including CROs, CFOs, and capital valuation and pricing actuaries. It's not meant to be a definitive view, and if you looked at it from a small company versus a large company's perspective or individual companies, you might plot them in different places on the chart. We do welcome any additional views or debate you might have on this during the Q&A session. So just going through the horizontal scale, you can see on the screen. By developing, we mean The board and senior management have limited or no engagement in the stress testing process. The results are not understood. There's little embedding in the decision-making process. And the modelling is ad hoc and relies heavily on manual adjustments. On the other end of the scale is someone with mature capability. And here we expect board and senior management to be heavily involved, that they understand the stress testing results, including the key assumptions and the limitations. Stress testing results are embedded in the decision-making process, and the modelling is automated and includes complex risks such as guarantees. So moving down the chart, starting off with processes and capabilities, and here we also consider modelling. In this aspect, we believe that Australian general insurers are more advanced than Australian life insurers. General insurers have better modelling capabilities, especially when it comes to catastrophe risks, whereas in our experience, Australian life insurers appear to struggle with multi-state, multi-factor, multi-time period modelling. Australian banks tend to be more advanced in their modelling capabilities compared to the insurers in general, and we believe this is probably to do with the regular stress testing requirements that APRA has mandated for them over the recent years. Although arguably, modelling a bank could be considered to be much simpler than modelling an insurance company because there are certain products and risks that are quite difficult to model, such as power business, guarantees, and catastrophes. We touched on the regulatory scrutiny previously faced by overseas insurers, and for this reason, we believe that global insurance groups and US banks have relatively more advanced modelling capability. And now considering governance and insights, including embedding into the decision-making process, on this aspect, we believe Australian life insurers are more advanced than general insurers, and that this is driven by the stress testing requirements of last year. Again, we believe that Australian banks are more advanced than the insurers, given the regulatory stress testing requirements of recent years, and also similarly that the global insurance groups and US banks are more advanced in this area because of the regulatory oversight that they face compared to our institutions. So overall, in terms of capability, we believe that the general insurers are slightly ahead of the Australian life insurers and that the banks are ahead of the Australian insurers. We also believe that global insurance groups and US banks are ahead of the Australian industry in general in this area. We also believe the APRA's expectations of stress testing on the insurance industry as a whole will increase from where the industry is currently at. And this is most probably driven by some of the regulatory activities of overseas markets. So on that note, I'll be handing over to Mira, who will be talking through one approach of developing a stress testing narrative.
Thanks, Twee. So the second part of our presentation outlines an approach to developing stress testing narratives. As Twee mentioned previously, when we refer to narratives, we are referring to the entire exercise. This includes formulation of the scenario, evaluation of its impacts, as well as consideration of the various management actions available to take in response to the scenario. As you can see here, we have developed a four-stage actuarial control cycle approach to developing stress testing narratives. The four stages are developing, measuring, managing, and reviewing. The first stage, developing, involves identifying the key risk drivers. The second stage, measuring, involves quantifying the impacts of the scenario, while the third stage, managing, involves deciding how best to respond to the scenario. The fourth stage, the review stage, incorporates a feedback loop. It is at the review stage that the impact of the outcomes of the scenario on the business will be considered. So as an example, at this stage, a review of the company's target surplus levels or a review of the various management actions contained within the ICAAP summary statement may be considered. We will go through each of these four stages in more detail as we progress through our presentation. As part of the stress testing narrative, it is vital that you engage the right people within the business. Key stakeholders to engage will include the board, the senior management, the actuarial function, the risk function, the finance function, as well as others. It is vital that the board and senior management be involved in the exercise and convey its importance throughout the organisation. This in turn will help to get buy-in from additional stakeholders and will encourage these stakeholders to make decisions under this hypothetical scenario. In addition, the board and senior management can provide insights and inputs into the key risks facing the organisation. These key risks should then be considered as part of the exercise. The additional stakeholders to involve will in part be driven by the type of scenario you are considering. So, for example, if you were considering a cyber risk style scenario, then it would be important to engage the IT managers within the business. Alternatively, if you were considering an economic scenario, then it would be important to engage investment managers. When developing a scenario narrative, suitable consideration should be given to the key risks. For example, the top 10 risks as specified by the company's risk heat map. Risk identification should be carried out both at the company level but also at the statutory fund level as APRA regulations apply at this level. The key risks could differ greatly by stat fund depending on the products that are contained within these. It will also be important to give consideration to the interactions between risks. Many risk factors that influence a scenario will exhibit either a cause and effect style relationship or a statistical relationship such as a correlation. It's important that we allow for these relationships as they exist under the stress scenario. Experience has shown us that in many situations, dependencies in stress situations are very different to the corresponding dependencies under normal circumstances. So to give you an example of this, we saw that during the recent global financial crisis, the correlation of stocks to high yield bonds and to real estate increased greatly. So it would be important to allow for this. Two additional considerations are the time horizon and the severity of the risks. The time horizon refers to the length of time that the business is exposed to the risk, and it also includes the time taken to recover from the event. Stress testing will also need to reflect any time constraints relating to management actions. There should not be an undue reliance on the timeliness of these mitigating actions. Depending then on the time horizon and the severity that you've chosen, there will be three main types of scenarios that you can consider. These are a sharp shock, a slow burn, or a combination. A sharp shock has a large and immediate impact. For example, it could be a stock market crash or a catastrophe risk. In comparison, a slow burn examines the accumulation of many smaller risks over a longer period. So to give you an example of a slow burn, you might look at the impacts of a gradual increase in unemployment and the corresponding impact that that has on disability claims. Some companies may choose to consider scenarios that examine a combination of risks, so both those which emerge immediately and those which emerge over time. We now consider a case study example to explore each of the four narrative development stages in greater detail. Suppose now that you are a large, mature life insurer called Safe Insurer. You sell retail lump sum and retail income protection products. Your experience has been stable over a number of years, so you've had stable lapse experience, stable claims experience, and stable new business growth. You have very traditional business processes. Your business is sold entirely through advisors with full underwriting of products. In addition, these products have typical exclusions, such as those relating to high-risk recreational activities. Typical underwriting and claim settlement times are lengthy, and the products that you sell are reinsured through the local reinsurance market. We now consider a potential strategic risk narrative of relevance to Safe Insurer. A new market entrant called Hashtag Insurance enters the market. Hashtag Insurance is a digital disruptor. Similar to Safe Insurer, Hashtag Insurance sells retail lump sum and retail income protection products. However, these products are sold entirely online. In addition, Hashtag Insurance provides special cover for high-risk recreational activities. Their target market is young, healthy, internet-savvy lives, and it manages to attract these lives by offering free wearable devices such as the Fitbit. In contrast to Safe Insurer, Hashtag Insurance has modern and efficient business processes. There is semi-automated underwriting of policies, and typical underwriting and claims settlement times are short, with full transparency to policyholders of claims progression. Hashtag Insurance has a parent which is very well capitalized and has a considerable risk appetite. As a result, the parent is willing to provide Hashtag Insurance with guaranteed support, and as a result, they have no reinsurance arrangements in place. Consider now it has been a number of years. Hashtag Insurance has increased its business volume significantly, in part due to an aggressive social media strategy. This media strategy has been designed to discredit traditional insurers such as yourself, such as Safe Insurer. As a result, policyholders have lapsed their policies with traditional insurers and taken out new policies with Hashtag Insurance. The most popular product has been a simple term life policy with a sum insured of $100,000 and no underwriting associated. Hashtag Insurance has now become the dominant insurer in the 25 to 40-year-old age group. I will now hand over to Liz, who will go through the four-stage narrative development process in greater detail as it relates to this scenario.
Thanks, Mira. So here you are. You're the actuary in Safe Insurer, and your CFO says, right, next board meeting. Hashtag Insurer has entered, and we want a board paper of the impacts on your company. So the idea is to have done some work in advance to know what's going on. So maybe Safe Insurer is not relevant to your company, but other things would be relevant to companies. So just imagine you have to tailor the narrative to your company or your client. So if you are, you may have, you know, par business, or you may have investment risks, or you may have these things. So this is one that's it's targeting a risk insurer, but there's you can imagine in your company. Just keep that in mind. Because we think you can use the sort of process and the methods we're talking about to tailor it to a solution to your company or your client.
Oh, no, down. Not good.
So the first thing is to, you know, hopefully you would have developed sort of a narrative, the idea in advance of the situation actually happening. That's the purpose. So the first thing you look at is you have a process. What companies do is that they have a workshop, and you get all the people in your company who are relevant to this scenario. So this scenario is about IT, it's about process, it's about underwriting, it's about claims. So you need those people in your workshop because they're going to give you the input as an actuary or a risk manager of actually what's going on in the business. Because what's going to happen to your company, you need the distribution people and you need the product people because your business volume is going to go down because you've just been undercut on price. You're going to have poorer claims experience and you're going to have anti-selection because the better lives are going to Hashtag Insurance. And then something that's going to be hard to model is you're going to have potentially reputational damage, and you've got this savvy Hashtag Insurance which is appealing to all these customers. So the idea is that, and of course then you need the actuaries because we'll be doing the assumptions, and you need the risk people too. You need to make sure that this is aligned to the risk of your company. So most companies have got risk in line with their risk management strategy and their risk appetite. They've got heat maps now of which are the main risks, and they might have developed their heat map with a workshop style. So the idea is, because we'll get to that, Because if this is not relevant to business, your business people will not be interested in this. So the idea is to make it relevant to your company. So that's why it's good to get a workshop and everybody contributes, because then they feel like they own the outcome. And then as an actuary, you'll get more information. Because it's quite complex to measure all the impacts, because what you need to do, you need to analyse the key drivers for your company and you need to consider all the financials. So you need to not only look at profit, you need to look at profit, you need to look at capital. Then if you've got less capital, there'll be impact on your dividend. And then if you've got, not in this example, but if you've got par business, maybe something's affecting your bonus rates and you'll have to take that into account. So how do you work out what might happen in this instance? You need to get different data to set your assumptions and management actions. So you can look at the past internal data. So maybe something's, so if it's a market scenario, companies are very good now at doing market scenario. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of models and we're pretty excellent at doing that. But for other things, it's not so easy. So the current circumstances of life insurance, it's not that easy to work out what the flow on the second order impacts that are going to happen. You can get industry data. You can look at overseas what happened, and you take a combined approach using judgment and data. Because you need quite sophisticated measurement. You need to look at assumption by assumption. So in this, you need to look at new business, you need to look at lapses, you need to look at mortality, you need to look at technology. So how long in your company does it take to launch a product? You know, how much is it going to cost? And then what sort of delegations do you have? How long is it going to take to change your underwriting rules or your product? Those are the sort of things that you need to know and put in if you want a strategic answer. And then the reputational risk, it's very difficult to quantify that. So maybe we've seen some companies using a more qualitative approach. So this happens, it'll have a low, medium or high impact, and then you'll assign some, you know, impacts and probabilities to that. It won't be exact, but you'll be taking it into account. And the more you do it, the better that you'll get and the more refined you'll be. Because what are you trying to do? You're trying to come up with management actions such that if this happens to you in your company or your client, that you're better prepared in advance. And so companies have, now we've got ICAPs and we've got management actions. So scenarios like this will help you test whether, if something should happen, the management actions that you have, whether they're actually feasible in the time frame that you have, and also they will have the impact that you have, that you're expecting to have when such a thing happens. So, you know, what actions, in this strategic example, what actions are available to compete? Is it affecting your capital? What actions do you have to manage your capital? So you're looking, if you go back, you're looking at P&L, capital, dividends, and then go to the management actions. You know, in your company or your client, have you done like a capital fire drill that tests whether those management actions, are you missing things? You know, can you reprice in 6 months? Can you launch a product in 6 months? Can you launch a product in 2 months? Can you cut your dividend? How do you cut your dividend if you're a shareholder? Shareholder-owned company, those sort of things. Our view is that the more stress testing, scenario testing with narratives that you do, the better prepared that you will be when these things come, and that the CFO or the CEO comes and the board wants this, and it gets easier the more that you've done. So it might not be the same scenario that we've got here or the same scenario that you've already done, but you'll have had the tools and you'll to be able to prepare things at a shorter notice and have a bit of understanding. And then it's important that the board is buying into these scenarios and knows what management actions will be taken in these various scenarios. So this sort of strategic scenario will help you with your strategic planning. So that's the management. So what? So then maybe the board might take our work to look at how they can take a view on the business strategy. Do we need to make changes to our product design, our business processes in response to such a thing? What are the impacts on pricing, new business? What are the key learnings? As I said before, the ICAP. Do we need to update our ICAP? And if it's affecting your capital, you need to look at the target surplus. And is your target surplus still appropriate for the risk that your risk appetite and the risk that you are taking? So hopefully you'll agree that this is a good thing to do. So some companies are doing it. Companies want to do more. Why don't we do more? It's because it's challenging. Yeah. So if we go back to our axes, there's two things. There's the process-related challenges, and then there's the insight-related challenges. So for the actuaries in the room who are actually doing the work, you'll understand pretty well the process-related challenges. The first thing is the resourcing constraints. Generally in your company, you've got the sort of key people, and they're the go-to people, and they're also the go-to people for the stress testing. Yeah. So there's only so many weeks in the year and so many hours in the day, so you need to, you need to invest in that, and you need to build better models but have more people and invest in it. But that's, you need to convince business of the value of it. Then you've got assumption setting and rationale. It's not easy, so you need to develop that. Then you've got multi-year. So we talked about you need to, things might deteriorate over the time, so you need to have models and processes that allow for multi-year, even if you're making approximations. You've got product features that are difficult to model. And then the more diverse and complicated your business is, the harder it is to do. But those who have already been involved in the industry test would know the more that you do it, the better that you get. So that's what we're advocating. And the second thing is you're investing a lot. What are you doing with it? And so you've got the insight-related challenges. So you need to choose a scenario that's relevant to business. If business thinks that this is never going to happen, they won't really take it seriously and do anything about it. It needs to be more regular, so it's not a one-off exercise for the actuaries, so you get their buy-in. Don't provide information that's too detailed. Just stick to the high level. What are the key things that can be done? And, you know, how does it feed back, having done all that work, to refining your management actions? So we're a big advocate of that and interested in the, you know, maybe you see different challenges in your company and what's preventing you from doing this so far. So just in conclusion, we think that scenario narrative exercises need to be done. They need to be topical. They need to align with the key concerns of the board and the senior management. They need to be performed on a regular basis so people buy into it and don't think it's a one-off and don't invest in it. The more you do it, the better you get, and you can refine the things for your company. We need to move beyond the process, the technical, getting the beautiful model with the and move beyond spurious accuracy to actual insight and what's really driving the risk in our company and what to do about it. And we think that you can, when you have this, you can inform a range of business activities, plans, management actions, capital recovery plans. And we've talked to a number of people in the industry, and it's hard to get here, and you've got to keep investing in it. But it's very useful when you've got it up and humming and working, and then business actually buys into it and actually understands a bit more about what's going on in the company. So it's generally, we think this is one approach that you can take. So thanks for your attendance, and really interested in your views about whether you think narratives is the way forward and the challenges that you have. So thanks very much.
Thank you. So quick time for questions. There's probably a lot of stuff there to think about and reflect on. So please come up to the microphone, state your name and your company. Who wants to be first? Bruce?
Bruce Vincent. I was actually interested in the stress testing for the unsafe company, the other company. It seems to me it's got no underwriting, targeting very young people. I can imagine a very interesting social media campaign targeting people. Say whether they have pre-existing conditions and so forth. So I think the story is it's equally applicable for, you know, new disruptive doesn't mean it's good. It's actually quite concerned. I'm sure their board would be quite concerned about what the best thing
to discuss. Is a microphone desk going to respond, or is that microphone desk?
Oh, yeah, that's a very insightful comment, actually. So I suppose you need to be outward looking as well as inward looking. So if you are the actuary and hashtag insurer, as Bruce points out, you've also got issues. So this was equally applicable to what might happen. So in a company, so that's very insightful.
Very much for that. My name is Nip and I'm from AIA. I suppose I found that very interesting, and one of the questions I guess my area looks at this as well. One of the areas that we think about is what's a good benchmark to reach. So as you mentioned, APRA have released a letter with their expectations, but I guess what would be your view of the benchmark for life insurers and general insurers? Is it up where the banks are or somewhere else? And perhaps what do you see as the best way that people have overcome those challenges that you've mentioned?
So my personal view is, you need to move towards here, but you need to focus on, the process and capability. You need to have that. But you really need to make it really impactful to your business, you need to focus on the governance and the insight. And to do that, you need to do you need to understand your business. You need to understand the risks in your business. You need to make it relevant for your business. You need to do multi-year, not just static. So your people in your business, product GMs of product and distribution and your CEO and your CFO, they understand the five key drivers of risk in their business and what impact they'll have. So when they see, ASX goes down, say, they should understand what parts of that at a high level. Should they be worried or not? Should that keep them up at night? That's my personal view. You need to move. It's good, but it's not easy. Yeah? So I think Twi or Mira talked about general insurers are really good at catastrophe modelling. That's their business. They need to be good at it. They need, because they use that to buy reinsurance. Whereas some of the life insurers, we don't have that imperative to that our total business depends on that. Our business is multi-risk. So I think it's looking at multi-risk, understanding your business, multi-year, and then it's the insight and making sure when you go back to your management actions that you can actually implement them in the time, that you can actually put your price up by what you are saying and that you will be able to buy reinsurance at the price that you are if you need that. If you're on it. That's my view. So, I think our view is everybody can be better. There's no right answer. We just sort of need to be moving towards this side of the curve. Yeah? But a lot of these things are driven by regulators starting. Even in Australia, life insurers, I think a lot of people improved their capability last year when the regulator asked them to do an industry stress test.
Maybe I'll ask a quick question. Liz, so you said... there was an awful lot of time and effort put into the stress testing last year by the 8 insurers and reinsurers. Do you have a view of whether it was all worth it and whether the outcome after it has justified all these expensive consultancy fees that were invested to perform the stress testing?
I've recently become a consultant and I used to work in a company. I strongly believe in this. I think it's very good. When you do it for the regulator, I mean, people who were involved in it, the spreadsheet to fill in all the answers was very, very detailed, and that's what took a lot of time. If you're doing it for yourself, you don't need to necessarily go to all that. So I wouldn't be put off. I think it's time consuming. And as I started off saying, you'd know in your company, there's a certain go-to people and those people do everything, right? Like that they're the key people and they're the key people for stress testing. I think that's the challenge. So you need good process and you need good people, but I think it's worth it. So.
So I think just to add to Liz's point, I think stress testing has some real business benefits. So, for example, it could inform your risk appetite, it could inform your management actions that you take and pricing decisions. But I think to see these real business benefits, it needs to move beyond being purely a regulatory exercise. You really need to invest in it, see the value to get the benefits and the insights.
Dennis Wilkinson, thanks for the presentation that you've done. I've got a question on the example you've used, because what you've presented is something that's very much around scenario modelling, something that's important for a business as part of its strategy. And while it's connected, I don't see that as being stress testing. The modelling that you're putting in place can well be used for stress testing, but the example you presented was one that I would see very much as being part of your strategic planning modelling. To me, the importance of stress testing is understanding where your failure points are within the business. What are the things that could occur and what are the things you can recover back from when the world goes completely against you? And the complications that go around that is, in fact, putting the narrative around that, which is not just around the markets go down or this happens, that there is some sort of pandemic that comes. It's the consequential impacts that go around that. It's the second order effects and how they all flow in through the business. And to me, that's what makes stress testing both difficult but also most valuable. But it does require getting into that level of sophistication, which is a lot further, I guess, than what you were presenting here. So I'm curious, what has been done, that really gets to that heart of helping boards and management understand, you know, where the failure point is within a business?
So I think that's the next level. So when you do this, then you work out what your key risks are and where your key stresses are. So you talk about the sharp shock. That's easier to work out. You know, stress to fail, I think, is what you're talking about. Reverse stress testing is another. We talked to one company who's got four levels of stress testing, and one of them is a specific stream that's called, they call it reverse stress testing or stress to fail, which I think is what you're talking about. I think this is before that. This is sort of more narrative to get, I think the point of this is to get business to buy into it. Because often you find reverse stress testing, yes, the board is interested, but management actually doesn't know exactly the combination of circumstances that would cause their company to fail, and it's more of a capital. So I think, as you rightly say, the stress testing is a reverse stress test. A stress to fail is the next level down from this, and that's a more technical. If you go back to the process and the insight, you need the technical, more technical process-oriented capability. So I agree with that. But there's levels of stress testing, and we start with single scenario stress tests, and then you need multi-factor. This is sort of putting then there's a third level of putting a narrative around it to get, because if you're an actuary working and it's hard to set assumptions, the more people you talk to out in your business, the more information that you actually get. I think that's what we're advocating. And then when you've got, you need all of that to work, as you rightly say, on what will actually cause my company to fail and a combination of events that will cause my company to fail. So I think that's the next level from that, but this is a step. I don't think you can go straight to reverse stress testing for the combination of events, because you need to know what the combination of events are. And I've certainly seen boards go to that level when they've seen the narrative, and then what this does is it raises expectations, yeah? The more you do, the next level is, of course, raising expectations, and then people will rightly ask, well, what combination of events is going to cause my company to fail, which is the reverse stress testing. So that would be like stage four. It's maybe stage three. So thank you for the question.
Thanks for the presentation. I'm Chit Wai from AIA. Just want to have a question on the level of narrative that you might find effective for a board. So in your experience with the clients, have you found that the week-by-week type of narrative, when it goes down, like a macroeconomic shock, if you go down a week-by-week narrative, is it any more effective than a year-by-year, say, consideration when it comes to a scenario testing? Have you found that with any particular scenario, any particular type of narrative was more or less effective than the others?
I think strategic scenarios don't happen week by week. So, you know, it's more the sort of, you definitely need to know, and there's a bias in setting assumptions. If you know what's going to happen in year two, it's almost good to when you do the workshop, start with, you know, you start with this will happen. You don't have the second lot of information, right? Because you will make assumptions because you know what the second lot of it, you know. So I think it's good to have multi-year. You don't need multi-week. It's too hard. Yeah. That's just my personal view. Because we're talking about a narrative. Most things won't happen in a week. Most insurance risks will not happen in a week. But it certainly needs to be multi, you know, maybe multi 6 weeks or, oh, sorry, 6 months or a year, whatever's aligned with your management actions. So, for example, if something happens and you are going to cut your dividend in response, you need to know the time to be able to do that, right? So the time to get approval, the time to your forecast, the time to make people, you know, higher up in your organisation know that you're not going to pay a dividend. And then it depends if you don't pay a dividend once or you don't pay a dividend at all, right? You know, I think most shareholders could manage not paying a dividend for a quarter or for 6 months, but if your scenario means you're never going to pay a dividend again, that's different as a capital management plan, you know. So I think I just think it needs to be multi-period. It doesn't necessarily, the focus shouldn't be on the, so for example, if you've got group insurance, you need to look at the time frame around re-tenders, and that's important for your business. Does that answer your question? So I suppose it depends. You know, market shocks, you probably need to, you know, those things happen a lot quicker, and, you know, in, all correlations 10 to 1 in sort of, you know, significant market events.
Okay.
Oh, operational risk. I think you need to align it to your capital plan and your management actions. So you need to have as granular as what you're saying. If you're saying you can do something in a week, then you probably need to test whether that's possible. If your management actions are around three months or 6 months, you've got more time to implement them. So that's my view.
Okay. I won't keep you from lunch. Please thank Elizabeth, Mira, and Tui.